I'm Gab. He's Jules. Gray skies over West London. Jules, I imagine grayer skies still over Barcelona right now. We're going to get into that epic game between Barcelona and Inter. We're going to round up all the other Champions League situations. Napoli and Bayern still perfect. Bruges yet to concede a goal. Erling Haaland, and I did borrow this from Craig Burley. He didn't play in the week because I think they just plugged him in to a giant charger and he's recharging it at the weekend, of course, with Liverpool playing Man City. But let's get into this because this was one of those games where Barcelona against Inter, you know, was going to effectively decide second place, at least on paper. Now, there are permutations. This is a game that Barcelona pretty much needed to win to be able to control their own destiny. It finished 3-3. It was a tremendous game. That second half, we saw mistakes, but we also saw a lot of quality. It was just so engrossing. Some people suggesting this might be one of the greatest Champions League group games ever. I want to get from you. I'll tell you how I saw the two teams approaching it, and then you can tell me if you agree and who got it right and who got it wrong. Simone Inzaghi did something that was kind of unnatural for him, which was, all right, we're going to go here to defend. And he set up that way. We're going to try to defend. We're going to hit on the counter. We may not be entirely equipped with it because obviously Dzeko's not so quick and whatever. But without Brozovic, without Lukaku, we're not even going to think about going here imposing ourselves. So shades of the Mourinho-Barcelona, the Mourinho-Barcelona game, right? Xavi approached this as we're going to play possession, the little fellas, Pedri, Gavi, moving the ball around, Rafinha, and we're just going to take the game to them and we'll get a goal at some point because we're the better team.
Yeah, I think that was about it. This is what we expected as well. I don't think that Inter could have played very differently, and I think that was the most efficient way for them to try to set up and then try to put on a special performance, which in the end they did. Although that first half, when Barca took the lead, just before the break, Ousmane Dembele, Mkhitaryan, forget Sergio Roberto, it's a good goal. Before that, Inter had big chances. Yeah. Ter Stegen, and they hit the woodwork, and Ter Stegen had to make big save as well. But then you thought, okay, this is it now. Barca took the lead against a team that was set up to defend and to not concede. So now the second half should be controlled by Barcelona, they have the players for it. And that's where I was the most disappointed, Gav, is that when they took the lead at home, at the end of that first half, I really expected Barca in the second half to just control it completely, control possession, control the rhythm of the game, most importantly, so don't let yourself exposed, don't let Inter hit you on the counter, don't be stupid. And they did the complete opposite.
Yeah, I think there was a pretty shocking lack of maturity to the way they played, which is surprising when, you know, in the end, Busquets, Piqué, Lewandowski, these guys have been through it all. I also think to some degree, I felt like in the approach of this game, Xavi loaded so much pressure on this Barcelona team with obviously the refereeing from the first leg, which we talked about. That didn't help. And I thought they were certainly hard done by in the first leg. At the Camp Nou, Inter fans were asked, don't bring your team colors, don't wear shirts, which, not go shirtless. That's not what we're saying. Don't wear your team jerseys, don't wear your colors. I thought you just loaded so much pressure on this game, which for a team that had actually not been playing great, Barcelona haven't been great in La Liga and in the last couple of games. I thought it was just the wrong way to approach it.
Yeah, I agree. I just think we will talk about Piqué in a little bit. I mean, Eric Garcia is another matter. But I think there's a point where Sergio Busquets, as good as he's been for this team in the last 15 years, maybe even more, there's the time where against certain type of teams like Inter, who were going to run a lot because they would play on the counter, that I don't think you could play Busquets anymore. And I think
you would have played De Jong.
100%. I would have started with De Jong, and then maybe later stages in that game, you bring Busquets to control again the midfield and the rhythm and all of that. But to start with Busquets, which the first half was okay, but the second half, once Inter had to attack a little bit more, go on the counter even more, I think that the lack of Busquets activity and intensity just cost Barca so much.
So the upshot of this, just to give you the lie of the land in the group, is that if Inter beat Victoria Pilsen
at San Siro.
At the San Siro next week, and look, we've seen Inter screw things up many times in the past, then Barcelona are out. Barcelona are going to the Europa League. Equally, if Bayern Munich beat Barcelona, which is not
even draw,
unthinkable.
Barcelona need two wins.
Then Barcelona are out. So it's definitely backs against the wall. And this is made all the more serious, of course, by the big gamble that they took. I know it's boring to some, but the reality is Barcelona did something unprecedented in the summer. Essentially, to make this very simple, between Barca Studios and the TV rights, they decided to get money now from investors and sell a chunk of their company, and they're going to pay it off against future income. Now, Laporta sold it to everybody. Oh, this is necessary. This allows us to go and buy all these top players that we signed this summer. And this will create a virtuous cycle because, you know, we're going to go and we're going to be good straight away, and that'll generate more revenue and blah, blah, blah. Now, I was skeptical because to me, the numbers didn't add up. I've said it all along. Others said, oh, you're wrong. You don't know what you're talking about. My concern was always Laporta is not a finance guy. Laporta is a lawyer. He's a politician. He's a leader. They do have finance people who make those projections. There's a number of Barcelona people, by the way, who were skeptical about this, who wanted to go more with organic growth. The reason I was against it, incidentally, is that there's only so many ways to drive revenue in football, right? You can increase your commercial revenue and your sponsorships and whatever if you're good. It wasn't really a problem for Barcelona. Barcelona is a massive brand, right? So, and we saw with Manchester United that once you reach a certain level, you know, even though United haven't really been dominant for the last decade, that side of it hasn't really suffered.
No.
You can increase revenue by getting more prize money if you go further in the Champions League. And of course, that's great if you win it all. But equally, you look at where Barcelona, how Barcelona finished the season last year, and obviously you have to qualify for the Champions League. I don't think there's any question that Barcelona would qualify for the Champions League this season again, right? They managed it last year with half a year of Koeman and without the new signings. And even if, you know, so you're gambling on, you know, getting even more from the Champions League. They've budgeted for a quarterfinal. The difference between a quarterfinal and a semifinal, it can vary because the formula is really complicated. I'm not going to get into it, but, you know, it's going to be like 15, 20 million. That's the difference between the two.
Yeah.
They said, we need to do this so that we can sell out the Camp Nou. Okay. Maybe. So you can charge more money. You make more money off the stadium. It's a big stadium. It's not always easy to fill, but again, you could also sell it through the excitement of Pedri and Gavi and Ansu Fati and whatever, plus some signings.
Yeah,
I think that's the road they should have taken. They made a calculated risk, and now you're facing a nightmare scenario.
Yes. And also, I think all this aspect is very important, and you're right. And this is the second year in a row, by the way, they will drop out to the Europa League.
Let's be very clear on this.
If they drop out to the Europa League. Or maybe they could drop out straight into the Super League. Them and Juventus play each other and they're the Super League winners. But it's your standing. This is Barcelona we're talking about. Despite all the financial problems, despite Messi leaving, this is Barcelona. Barcelona cannot not qualify 2 years in a row for the knockout stage of the Champions League. This should not happen. And I think that this will hurt them if it happens, as you said. Financially, of course, and the loss of revenues that they would get and all of that. But I think for the image, this is terrible. Because as well, like you rightly said, now everybody's going to remind everybody about all those levers, all the risk, all the gambles that they took in the summer, where they never thought this was going to happen. And we said from the beginning, this is a tricky group. But I think a lot of the optimistic fans were going like, okay, but look at Inter, 4 defeats in the first 8 Serie A matches. They're not in good form. We should be okay. Bayern, no problem. They're the best. But after that second best is for us.
I mean, but I think, again, because Barcelona weren't top seeds, again, if you're talking about purely in the Champions League context, you've budgeted to reach the quarterfinals, but you knew you were going to get a 1 seed. You knew you were going to get Barcelona.
You could have got Eintracht Frankfurt.
True, or you could have gotten Manchester City,
true.
Right? And then you get a second seed, and then you play Bayern or Manchester City in the round of 16, and you're not going to be favored. So it was always a far more risky approach, I think, that people realized. I'm a huge fan of Xavi. I'm a fan of him as a person. I've had the privilege of speaking to him and so on. But I also think in this game, we talked about it briefly before, he got some of the approach wrong. Yeah. A lot of the focus is on the defending. I want to ask you this question off the top, right? Barcelona have conceded one goal in La Liga in 9 games.
Yeah.
And then they've conceded 6 goals in 4 games in the Champions League. Is there a certain schizophrenia there between the two? Or is it all just down to the fact that no Araujo, no Jules Koundé?
No Christensen.
I think Christensen belongs in a slightly different bracket.
Of course, but still, you still have to play them. Yeah. Garcia and Piqué.
And then when you play Eric Garcia and Piqué in a game like this, it all falls apart.
Yeah.
Should they have made some adjustments to get them some more help on the day, on the pitch, maybe set up slightly differently in midfield or something? Or
yes and no. I think to be fair to Xavi, there were just not many options there. You know, without Christensen, Koundé, Araujo. By the way, Koundé and Araujo, who you lost in the international break. So it's not, you see, I think it must be even more annoying and gutting for a club and for a manager to see your players going away with the national team, which is great. They have to, and that means they're the best. It shows they're the best. But then getting hurt there and not being able then to play them in such a crazy schedule like the one we have this season. But then unless you play, I don't know, Sergio Roberto or a kid from La Masia, you only have Piqué and Garcia available, so you play them. I think Ter Stegen has been superman for them this season. He saved 19 of the 20 shots that he faced in the league, and that the only one that went in is the goal. But there's a point where even he can't save you anymore. No. There's a point where
they're fortunate that Ter Stegen's back on this level.
Yeah,
because this is the other thing. Because it wasn't that long ago there were people who wanted Ter Stegen out because his level had clearly dropped. Completely. And now he's back to being... For me, there was one point where Ter Stegen was one of the top 5 keepers in the world. I think arguably you could put him in that bracket again right now.
100%.
100%. On the Piqué point, I don't want to belabor this, but Gerard Piqué, I think, played the first 2 games of the season. And then he disappeared and he didn't play at all. And it's always difficult, right? Xavi, Gerard Piqué were teammates, they're friends.
Yeah,
yeah. I'm interested in the thought process because clearly there's an element. I thought there was an element of rust with Piqué.
Not good enough anymore. It's not even rusty. He's just not good enough anymore. He's never been the most mobile, right? Even less at his age now, and even more without the game time, because he had no game time. There's no rhythm to his game. And for me...
But why not give him the game time? Give him more game time?
Because he was never supposed to play. My theory, Gab, is that he's only in that squad because during the pandemic, when they extended all those deals to kind of, make cuts in the wage and level, defer the wages.
They also took cuts too.
Yeah, cuts and deferrals. That's the only reason why he's still at that club. It's because they said to him, okay, we're going to extend your deal, but you're going to take less money, you're going to defer your wages, blah, blah, blah. Otherwise, he should not be there anymore. He was a great player, amazing player. He just can't play there anymore. And for me, his mistake on the Barella goal, which is one of the biggest mistakes we will see at this level this season, where he's got no awareness. He doesn't even know that Barella is with him. But yet, he's got the cockiness of saying like, yeah, we've got this. Let the ball go through to, oh no. Because if you don't have the legs anymore, like he has, if you don't have the rhythm anymore, like he has, at least usually at that level, you've got the intelligence and the awareness. And at least look at Thiago Silva, or even Sergio Ramos, you compensate all what's lacking by your intelligence and the awareness.
Like anybody can make a mistake at any time, right? But that is the part that's worrying. That was a mental error, and that's not something that you're accustomed to see from a veteran like that.
Yeah.
I can accept him being slower and whatever. Fine. Time passes. Time is undefeated, as Rocky Balboa famously said. I don't want to keep picking on Eric Garcia though, but.
Like
he does not have the excuse of time.
No. Nope.
The defending on the Lautaro thing, on the Lautaro goal.
Unreal.
I know the focus is going to be on Piqué, and I can understand you throw Piqué and Busquets out of the bus because they're the older players and whatever. But what is this guy's problem? What is that with Lautaro Martinez? I mean, this is a fair matchup, right? Lautaro Martinez is not big and strong, right? He's quick, but then so is Eric Garcia. This should have been a perfect matchup. And to see that kind of defending, what's his brain fart? He doesn't have the excuse of being 34 and having to go away with the Shakira.
I just don't think he's a Barca player. I don't think he's good enough. He's only there because he went to La Masia. They lost him to City. they thought we're going to bring him back, like we brought Piqué back from United, and look how well that worked. So we're going to do the same.
And yeah, Luis Enrique also picks him too.
I know.
So clearly they see something in him that we don't.
I don't know. Yeah, but for him, for that ball to come from Inter's right inside, right hand side, right wing, towards Lautaro at the edge of the box, and for Garcia not to be even looking at the trajectory of the ball, but just looking basically at the face of Lautaro, not knowing where the ball is behind him. Almost like if you're playing basketball and you're defending on the other side, and you just have to be there to make sure that, you know, your guy is going to get the ball and then he's going to die. But not like this. So then Lautaro chests the ball down and Garcia is surprised because he didn't see the ball coming because he was not looking at the ball. How can you not look at the ball?
I thought that was, frankly, appalling. You know, I did not expect, even with that back four, which includes, you know, Marcos Alonso and Sergio Roberto, that those two guys would actually be the real issue on the night. I thought Sergio Roberto was okay. I thought Alonso, you know, did his part.
Yeah.
Further up the pitch, I think there's a Lewandowski issue. Not because of Lewandowski, but because of the service he receives. In the first leg, he was kept quiet. I think, you know, he had a couple touches and whatever. In his leg, yeah, he had the two goals, one at the end and whatever. But I feel like a lot of it was he had to create his own shots. And so this speaks to the supporting cast. And on paper, Rafinha, Dembele, Pedri, Gavi, there is a lot of talent to set him up.
Yeah.
And yet, it doesn't happen. I think we need to give credit for the way Inter defended, especially I thought Bastoni and Skriniar had pretty monstrous games. Onana was very good too. But is something amiss here? What could they have? There's been a lot of focus on Rafinha and Dembele both wanting to play on the right. Mm-hmm. For my money, I think it's time. Ansu Fati is fit. I think Rafinha and Dembele are good players, although I think Dembele is inconsistent, and I don't think Rafinha is a second coming of Neymar. I think Ansu Fati could be one day.
Yeah.
Why isn't he on the pitch?
Maybe.
From the start, I mean.
Yeah. Maybe there's still that question marks, or maybe there's still a bit of a concern around his fitness if he was to play 90 minutes in a game of this intensity. You know, I think he might well play. Well, not at the weekend because it's the classic.
Well, we say a game of this intensity, and it turned into a very intense game. But you knew what the script was going to be. You knew the script was going to be Inter defending and Barcelona a ton of the ball.
Yeah. That's true.
If I have a guy who can win the one-on-ones, who's comfortable playing on the left, who is far less predictable than Dembele, I'm just saying Dembele and Rafinha are predictable, but surely Ansu Fati gives you a different dimension than those two.
I don't know. We don't really know his current level. Maybe at training, you know, he's not performing. Maybe the data that they have from training or from the 15 minutes, 20 minutes that he plays there and there are not convincing. I don't know. I did wonder yesterday why not bring him on earlier even. The issue I have with Dembele and Rafinha is that, and we said it after the game at the San Siro last week, that there was just, apart from the Dembele plan, there was no other plan. And I think that you can't just always cross the ball. He worked on Lewandowski's second goal. It was a good header, kind of. But apart from that, in your patterns of plays with the ball, I don't think there's enough. There's enough. I don't think that you penetrate from a center position enough when you've got Gavi and Pedri, who should be able to do that. I don't see enough, you know, 1-2s on the edge of the box, for example, with Lewandowski playing with his back to goal and getting him involved with him in the build-up. It seems to be, let's go wide and let's use our wingers and then something is going to happen. And then one, you completely underuse the talent of Pedri and Gavi, completely. You clearly don't trust Lewandowski as a holder of the ball and to play on him, which he can do. Maybe, okay, at Bayern, he didn't do it like that because they had so much talent going forward. But I don't understand what Xavi is trying to do attacking wise. That's my worry.
I mean, the blueprint, you've got Lewandowski, one guy playing against three center backs, right? So the basic blueprint is if the ball's on the right, then the other guy comes in at the far post, and so we've got two people there. But mix it up, get other bodies in.
Why De Jong should have started that game.
I'd also make a point that maybe Frank Kessie should have come in earlier. I'm not saying drop Gavi or whatever. But if you're looking for a person who brings that level of physicality, which I think in a game like this you needed, let's not forget, Inter's midfield was Barella, who's extremely intense but is a little guy, little fella. Yeah, yeah. Mkhitaryan, who's a number 10 who has to sit deeper, and Calhanoglu, who's a number 10 who had to sit deeper in this game, right? Imagine somebody with the strength and drive and intelligence of Frank Kessié just rampaging through there. Again, just give it a different look. And there was none of that. It was almost like you're making a philosophical statement by this predictable passing the ball sideways, which doesn't even become passing the ball sideways. You know, people have said, oh, Pedri and Gavi, oh, it's like Xavi and Iniesta. No, it's not. Xavi and Iniesta, they were in the middle, well, apart from the fact that a guy named Messi up front who created space for them, but they were in the middle of it all. Mm. Here, with this obsession with the wingers, and I'm sorry, we're talking about Rafinha here. We're not talking about Garrincha.
What
are we talking about?
You know, what was interesting watching the game was how very, very rarely they used the half spaces. They did it well on the goal, and this Mkhitaryan loses Sergio Roberto, and it's a good cross, and it's a good finish by Dembele. But it seems to me a little bit, and I don't want to be too harsh because they might win 3-0 the Clásico, I don't know. But that a lot of the promises that we saw early on with Xavi in the way they were using the ball, the way they were moving, is not gone. And that recruitment, we go back to squad recruitment strategy, squad planning, etc. To have almost bought a very similar player to Dembele and Rafinha, that you've gone away a little bit of the good thing that Xavi did earlier after arriving at the club, with the ball, I mean, and the use again of Gavi and Pedri and De Jong even more. And I just think, not sure that's the right direction right now.
The Clásico is coming up this weekend, which obviously further turns the screws. Equally, a win for Barcelona could put all this behind us a little bit. I mean, not all of it, but
that's very true.
So I think there's still all to play for. And look, again, I go back to this. This is still Inter. We've seen, I think, few teams in the history of football have been as spursy, to use a favorite adjective in the past, as Inter. I want to get you, though. It could have been worse because, obviously, that counterattack with Aslani at the end.
I was going to say, if they don't qualify, Aslani, I'm not sure, can go back to Milan.
I will never fault a young player for showing personality like that, for backing himself to score, right?
Is that the personality?
I honestly want to see that. I don't want to see, in Italian football, for too long there's a culture about younger players, bide your time, don't take chances, rely on the older players and so on, right? Here, he's through and goal. Like, hindsight's always 20-20, right?
Hindsight? Surely he knows Gustavs is there.
Yeah, he could have squared it.
Oh, Mkhitaryan.
He could have squared it.
No, he should have. And that's why I disagree with you. I love responsibility for a young player. It's great. Not when it's the wrong decision. This was the wrong decision to go for the shot. Even if it's a great save from his first touch is poor because he's too far ahead. When he doesn't even need to control the ball, because if he squares it straight away, Mkhitaryan has a tap in. So first, control the ball the way he did is wrong, and then it's a wrong touch. It's a heavy touch, which means that Ter Stegen can come out. It's still a very good save, but it's the wrong call.
I know. He's a young player. Yeah, I'm going to give him a pass. I want to see people try difficult things.
I just hope that Inter qualifies.
Well, I don't want to show any more anti-Barcelona bias here. On Inter, and I go back to remind people, yes, if you want to go and talk about there's no Koundé, there's no Araujo, great. It's true.
Mm-hmm.
I would argue that certainly in Inter's preseason plans, the two players who were missing for them from this game and from the first leg, Brozovic and Lukaku, are more important to Inter than Koundé and Araujo are to Barcelona.
Yeah.
I don't know what this says. I think it says a lot about Inzaghi's relationship with his players, that they would rally around, that they would embrace this game plan, which is not a game plan for which they're suited.
No.
Yeah, you're asking.
That's not his style either, really.
It's not his style of play. You know, he very much went against it. Mm-hmm. People say, oh, it's easier to defend than to attack. Yeah, yes and no. When you are built to attack in a certain way, when that's all you practice to that point, and that's pretty much all you do most weeks in Serie A, to go and change it around like this, you become almost like Simeone. I think is a big, big ask, and I think we need to give credit to Inzaghi for that.
Let's not forget that they went into that reverse fixture last week in bad form, in crisis. There were even question marks about his own future.
Oh yeah,
despite signing a new deal in the summer, they won that first game. You know, again, with very low XG, that goal from Çalhanoğlu, anything you want, a bit of luck with the referee's decision, all of that. Then they go to Sassuolo, they win. Then this, okay, this could feel like a defeat, maybe, because they should have won. For me, I see this as a win for them. And everything is turned. And I think he deserves a lot of credit. And I think the players as well. And when you see the reaction, well, on the third goal, because they thought that was the winner, of all the staff and all the subs, all running onto the pitch to jump on you know, the players who were on the pitch. I thought it was great. And it showed that the team spirit there. I remember the DiMarco celebration at full time in the reverse fixture when he went and like shook Inzaghi and said, like, they were so happy as a unit. And I think this, maybe they should play Barcelona every week.
I like to the, not quite outside the box, but obviously Onana just...
Inzaghi listened to you.
Well, first of all, playing Onana, sticking with Onana in the Champions League, with all due respect for Handanovic, I don't know that I need to see him play and say, I think Onana's earned it. But, you know, just what Onana's been through, right? This is a guy who came through the ranks at Barcelona.
Yeah.
This is a guy, obviously, he had the suspension, the issues at Ajax. Mm. To come back in this and to have the foresight, the awareness to go and just hit that ball long to realize people are out of position, that's pretty special. I mean, that and he's still a young goalkeeper, too.
Yeah, he's still young. And on his line, he's got incredible reflexes at times. He's made mistakes, of course, like a lot of young goalkeepers, but his distribution is what I think stands him apart from a lot of other goalkeepers. And on Wednesday night in the Champions League, we saw the incredible ball from Diogo Costa to for the first Porto goal, which was outstanding. But for me, you're right, the Onana one for Lautaro on the Gutens goal is even better. And when you've got someone like that, which Handanovic doesn't have the same qualities, he brings you something else. But I think for an Inzaghi side, there's no doubt that Onana is a much better option than Handanovic.
Final point on Inzaghi at the end when he sends on all the wing backs, Gosens and Villanova.
Four or five together.
I mean, again, I thought that was kind of thinking outside the box very, very much. I've got these guys who are, you know, Villanova is ridiculously fast. Yeah. Gosens ridiculously direct. Gosens has a horrible time at Inter. But again, exploiting the situations, thinking like that, having that flexibility. I said this before about Inzaghi, right? He doesn't have his brother's personality. He's, when he speaks, he seems a little bit goofy, kind of like, you know, the dorky, insecure kid. But I think there's a lot there, and there's a lot there in terms of personality, and I think he showed it.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit $1 million stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify is your no excuses business partner. Sell without needing to code or design. Just bring your best ideas and Shopify will help you open up shop. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjules, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjules now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/gabjules.
All right, enough Barcelona and Inter. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gav.
Chelsea beat Milan 2-0 at San Siro. Jules, I know Milan are annoyed by the Tomori penalty and sending off. Can we talk about the football first?
Yeah.
Because I thought Chelsea destroyed them over two games. They had absences, but this was emphatic. So some love for Graham Potter, please.
Yeah, some love for Chelsea and Potter, for Mason Mount as well, who I thought was outstanding. In both games. It helps you, of course, when... In that game itself, when you play with 11 against 10 for more than an hour, but still overall, and you don't always have to play well to be dominant. You can just make the most of your opposition's mistake, the mistake that you force the opposition to make, by the way you play. And that's certainly what Chelsea have done. So well done to them. And I think the Potter process is taking shape and good shape. And okay, Gab, it's a lot about that penalty and the red card for Tomori. So where do you stand on it?
I think the penalty was soft, but only it's scandalous to give it. I think there's a misconception about the red card itself, because I've heard people say, well, if you're going to give the penalty, you have to send them off because he doesn't play the ball, because yeah. that's what it says in the laws of the game. Referees do not simply referee based on what it says in the laws of the game. There is room for discretion for them. Mm-hmm. And that discretion is guided by the directives they're given by their head of referees, in this case, UEFA, but also FIFA with IFAB. So that rule about the penalty and the red card if you don't play the ball is specifically designed for situations where, you know, a defender rugby tackles the other guy or whatever. That's not what happened here. And referees were told that there would be, that they should apply a high bar to this kind of situation to send somebody off. I saw no need to send him off. I thought a yellow would have been more than sufficient. Funnily enough, it occurred to me, if the goalkeeper, Tata Rusano, had known that Tomori was going to be sent off, why not just let Mount score?
Yeah, maybe, right?
And then you go 11-11.
Maybe.
Paris Saint-Germain and Benfica draw 1-1, Jules. I think it got lost in all the Mbappe hype, which we'll get to in a minute.
Yeah.
Shouldn't they be a little bit concerned about first place in the group? Because it's going to come down to goal difference. Well, goal difference is equal right now. It could come down to goals scored.
Yeah, or maybe to the Juventus clash with Benfica and with PSG then. I don't know.
I'm assuming Juventus lose all their games.
Yeah, could lose everything. I'm more concerned about how poor or very average this PSG team was without Messi, without Nuno Mendes, who brings verticality to that team, which Bernat doesn't really bring. I'm a bit worried that they're not playing well, that they look tired, and they might have been tired because Galtier didn't really rotate much so far this season. There's obviously the classic against Marseille on Sunday. There's very important games coming after that. It's just the vibe is not good right now. And as you said, Gab, Kylian Mbappé, it's all about him right now. He says that he feels betrayed by PSG and that he's ready to leave the club as early as January. I feel like I've talked about it nonstop, Gab, so it's your turn now to tell us what you think.
So, one thing I made is that Mbappe has all the leverage here. I wrote a column about this. Hey, look, keeping my tradition, plugging my columns. Mbappe and Haaland, the big difference is they have far more leverage than Cristiano and Messi had at their age because of the way they set up their contracts, right? Yeah. Haaland with the clause, which, Pep says doesn't exist, but then
we know
it does. But then, does it not exist now because it only kicks in 2024? Who knows, right? Yeah. And also Mbappe taking this 2+1 deal, right? He's the guy in charge. Why he's unhappy, so I've read so much stuff. You can tell me what's true, what's not, what you think is true, what's not, about Galtier and Luis Campos and Antero and all this stuff. The bottom line, though, is that I don't understand why you would flex your muscle now in this situation. If you also have a World Cup coming up as well, by the way. What are you so wound up about? If the moment France either win the World Cup or get eliminated during the World Cup, Mbappe says, oh, guess what? I'm unhappy with Luis Campos and Neymar and Galtier, whatever, right? And I want to move now. Nothing changes, right?
No, that's true.
Nothing changes. So why bring this up now?
Because I think he's had enough. It got to the point where this was brewing. And it got to a point where he exploded and he had to make it known, basically. This is what happened. Because I think he wanted maybe people to know why he was not enjoying his football right now, why he was not happy.
Who cares why you're not enjoying your football? You're a professional footballer.
Yeah.
You're hurting yourself by doing this now, because now you're going to create all these other distractions. You're going to spill over with France.
He doesn't see it as distraction, though. He doesn't think that this is hurting himself. He thinks that it's actually good that this is out there, because now other clubs are aware that he wants to go, and maybe some will come for him.
Because they wouldn't notice that nobody has his mom's number.
No, it's not that. But like, I think
they wouldn't come for him in January if he says this after the World Cup.
No, but I mean, maybe he would. But after the World Cup, when he would not have been with PSG for 6 weeks, potentially, you could also say the same thing. Like, well, why saying it now after the World Cup? I don't know. I just think. I mean, we know how he is. It's a lot about him anyway. It always is, and it will always be. So.
More good news for Paris Saint-Germain. They've been accused of hiring an agency to conduct a social media smear campaign against Mbappe. Jules, did they hire Bartomeu as a consultant?
Well, it's a tip. But funnily enough, that company they hired is based in Catalonia. So, I mean, for all we know, it might be the same one as the one Barcelona and Bartomeu used a few years ago. I don't know. They denied this. They said this is not true. It was a smear campaign against Mbappe, but also Rabiot when he didn't want to extend his deal there. Jean-Michel Aulas at Lyon and the enemies of the club. Crazy story. We need to know a bit more about it to see who's wrong, but it's just not a good look. Lazic equalizer from Antonio Rudiger helps Real Madrid avoid defeat away to Shakhtar Donetsk as they draw 1-1 and qualify. Gab, this would have been another chapter in the Ukrainian fairy tale, though.
It would have been, obviously, Madridistas, chill for a minute. Yeah. We saw Hazard, he rotated plays, he knows he's got the Clásico coming up, blah, blah, blah. He just got the job done. First of all, just two things on this. One, I thought Shakhtar again, your boy Mudrik and Trubin, phenomenal.
Really, really.
And Antonio Rudiger. I mean, talk about heart of a lion. Such leadership. He's got to be a cult hero.
20
already.
Stitches.
It's that collision was so hard. Oof. Oh, my goodness. Tottenham Hotspur beat Eintracht Frankfurt 3-2 to go back to top of Group D. Jules, given how the PSG talk must have depressed you, and you're always cheery, I suspect you're going to rather tell me about Heung-Min Son's tekkers than mistakes by Dyer and Kane.
Yeah, I mean, that volley that he scored with his left foot on the Højbjerg cross was just incredible. The strength and the power, the balance that he has when he hits it, amazing. Clearly back to his best. Him and Kane, that relationship really put Frankfurt to the... So although Frankfurt played well, they took the lead, as you said, Dyer mistake, big mistake, Kane missed a penalty to make 4-2 late. And it was a bit of a, you know, shaky end of the game. But in the end, it's a win. And it was, again, a very emotional night with a tribute to Ventrone. Liverpool beat Rangers 7-1 at Ibrox as Mohamed Salah comes off the bench to score the fastest hat-trick in Champions League history in just 6 minutes and 12 seconds. Gab, Klopp must be happy.
I think Klopp is happy.
Not for the first time.
I was on the show, though. Stevie Nicol was not happy, too. He said until minute 54, he says there was nothing separating the two teams.
Yeah.
Rangers were very intense. Eventually, Rangers fell away. What I will say in Liverpool's defense is, was it Liverpool? Is it still Liverpool who, when you've got Luis Diaz out, Alexander Arnold out, Thiago Alcantara on the bench, Mohamed Salah on the bench. I mean, I counted Robertson on the bench.
Yeah, Matip out.
I counted 6 guys out, you know, so... Let's be a little more generous. They're a better team than Salah's there. There's still issues. Yeah. There's still issues of confidence and whatever. Still not feeling Darwin Nunez. But, I mean, come on. It's 7-1. Salah looks up for it.
Yeah.
Sticking with Liverpool, Jules, I don't think Didi Haman will be getting a Christmas card from Jurgen Klopp this year.
No, very surprised by that outburst from Klopp. In the pre-match press conference on Tuesday when someone said, Didi Haman basically said that you need a spark. And he went, Didi Haman? Oh, very respected, very cynically, he said, very respected pundit everywhere he's been. I'm like, oh, wow. Okay, so I don't know what the beef is between Didi and Jürgen. I didn't know there was a past between them two.
It's weird. Fun fact about Didi Haman, 2007, Champions League final in Athens.
Yeah.
I was in the press box. Guess who was sitting next to me? Didi Haman, who actually did not have a ticket. Imagine, Liverpool fan without a ticket.
Oh my God, yeah.
And he sat next
on
to me.
On your lap? Oh, no.
No, he didn't sit on my lap. He is a big fella.
Yeah.
He sat in the gangway. He sat in the stairs and watched the game next to me.
Nice.
Obviously, would have preferred a different result.
Yes, of course. Let's talk about perfection now, Gab, because Napoli beat up Ajax 4-2 and stayed perfect in the Champions League so far. 4 wins in 4 games, plus Victor Osimhen is back.
And you know what that means? That
means
the best is yet to come. Oh, that first half, they were phenomenal. Raspadori's goal.
Oh, wow.
Kvaratskhelia ripping it up again.
Yeah.
Chucky Lozano for the first
time. I mean, great header.
They play with so much pace. It feels like they have so many guys who can hurt you because, you know, we don't even mention Osimhen's back, but you've got Gio Simeone as well. They're absolutely flying. Now, can this continue? Will it continue? Who cares? Enjoy it for now because it's incredible. And I think they taught a lot of people a lot of lessons, as I've said before, about transition and how you cope with younger players. In the interest of equity, let's remember that Bayern are also perfect, Jules. They beat Victoria Pilsen 4-2 and have qualified.
They've qualified, yeah. I mean,
and they didn't play in the second half either.
They didn't play. They stopped playing at halftime. They let Victoria Pilsen score two goals in the second half. And I think Thomas Müller came off not through a bad injury or serious injury. And there was no Musiala, for example. They so Sadio Mane scored again. They got the job done very easy. I think they were 3-0 up within 20 minutes. Juventus lose away to Maccabi Haifa 2-0 on Tuesday and are nearly eliminated. Gab, Max Allegri and Andrea Agnelli had plenty to say after the game.
So I'll get to what they said. But first of all, I have an issue with Angel Di Maria. I have a major issue with Angel Di Maria. 10 minutes into the game, 20 minutes, whatever it was, you know, he goes, he touches his leg and he comes off. I get it. There's a World Cup coming up. And I get it, you want to preserve yourself. And I'm not a doctor. This is a really, really bad look. You know my thoughts about Juve signing him. That out of the way, the question is, how do you react to this horrendous situation? I'm not sure they gave the right messaging. I think they went back to the usual cliches. Allegri comes out and says, well, no, it's not about skill. It's not about tactics. It's just about heart and desire. And I'm like, come on, man. You really believe this in 2022? Really? And of course, they said, oh, no. And now we're all going to go back to the training ground and we're going to stay locked in the training ground until the derby against Turin this weekend. Again, you know, what are these like methods from the 1950s? Andrea Agnelli, okay, he said, we're ashamed. We're all ashamed. Okay, that's nice. It's the right thing to say. But then he says, no. This, you win with everybody. You lose with everybody. We're all equally responsible. 80, 90 people, not just the players, the backup staff, blah, blah, blah. And I think that's the wrong message. Completely. I think that's the wrong message because you know what? They're not all equally responsible. You come and tell me that Fabio Miretti or Locatelli are as responsible for this situation, or even your friend Rabiot, who's actually played really well, as some of the others who've been really poor, or as responsible as Allegri, who actually picks the team.
Yeah.
You think Carlo Pinsoglio, the third goalkeeper and local, you know, stroke bouncer at the club, is he as responsible as Szczesny? I don't. This is the. I mean, I hope internally. They're not going around saying you're all equally responsible. Because otherwise, the players are going to say, is Paul Pogba responsible when he hasn't played a minute? I get what you're saying, but let's have a little bit more grown-up messaging here.
Yeah.
Marseille lost their first two group games. Everybody was talking about what a genius Ruben Amorim is. Maybe he still is, but the tables are definitely turned after Marseille's 2-0 away win at the Avalade.
Very good win. I mean, they, again, benefited from an early red card. It's Gaio after 18 minutes or something.
It's easier when you play more than
an hour. Well done to them, Steven. Very much now back in the conversation to qualify. Erling Haaland is rested for Manchester City and they are held to a 0-0 draw away at Copenhagen. Gab, does this mean that they are Haaland dependent?
Yeah.
Oh, Erling, no party.
Yeah, no, Erling, no party. No, it doesn't. Look, they missed the penalty. They had the other goal chalked off for a handball, which I thought was highly, highly dubious.
Yeah.
And they went down to 10 men. So I'm not overly concerned there. Copenhagen had six teenagers in their starting 11. I don't think they particularly cared. I think they were thinking ahead, obviously, to Liverpool. But like I said, and I'll repeat this, even though I said it earlier, that image of Pep Guardiola keeping, you know, plugging Erling Haaland into a massive charger in the back and, you know, his head starting to glow as he turns, like, you know, from yellow to red in the back. That is a very, very, very scary proposition. Yeah. And release clauses. Put those to one side for now.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Borussia Dortmund are held at home by Sevilla and Jorge Sampaoli making his Champions League debut. Jules, Bellingham and co. will still be okay, right?
Yeah, they're 5 points clear of Sevilla. They've got 7 points. Sevilla, 2 points with two games to go. One of them being at home to City, who already qualified, who will go to Dortmund in 2 weeks' time. And probably Pep will, I don't know, rotate. And 1 point will be enough then for, I think, for Dortmund to qualify. So I'm not worried at all. I wasn't a believer. I have to be honest here. I didn't see this one coming, but you were, Gab. And after their draw with Atletico Madrid, Bruges have qualified for the knockout round after just four games for the first time in the history in the Champions League. Incredible achievement.
Yeah, I think you can count on one hand the number of clubs have qualified after just four games.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, sorry. I don't even mean
better. And not just that, they also haven't conceded a goal. Incredible. Simon Mignolet saving everything in sight. Nice. And of course, that great leadership from Mr. Champions League. I know you love that original nickname. Hans van Aken. Belgians are so original with their nicknames. but so what I didn't get about this Atleti game, obviously, you know, Simeone said it was always one of the best games we played this season. Yeah,
they created a lot. They had a lot of chances.
You have a ton of chances. You know what the other team's going to do. You know they're all the way back. You had the poor guy, Buchanan, earlier, you know, getting sent off. I mean, what do you, you know, you're trying to punch the ball into the back of the net.
I know, man.
You need a better solution than that. Oh, and by the way, people, we're talking about this on the show, like, oh, but, you know, you sent on Witzel instead of Joao Felix. I mean, at that point, I would rather send on Axel Witzel, who is tall and has a big head, not as big as it was when he had the bigger hair, but still. And maybe I get something and mix it up in the box on a set piece. Then Joao Felix was just going to sulk and walk around in circles.
But Joao Felix should have come on earlier anyway.
I don't know. I think he's got such a negative vibe around him. Dinamo Zagreb and Salzburg battle to a 1-1 draw. Jules, this group is still wide open.
Yeah, well, I mean, certainly
second place.
Yeah, for second place, Salzburg, certainly.
Although, you know, Chelsea only have 7 points, by the way.
Yeah, they do, but...
Just flagging, like, Chelsea not out of the woods either.
No, that's true, but they look in control of that group.
Of
and then for the second place, Milan, and it looks like Milan and Salzburg, and that game coming up will be huge between the two and see who's the winner. If there's a winner, if there's no winner, if Zagreb can pull another upset against Chelsea, which I'm not sure will happen or can happen, then we could go all down to the wire in that group, which is, you know, what we want, really. Not a good debut for Xabi Alonso in the Champions League, Gab, as Bayer Leverkusen lose at home to Porto 3-0. And Kemi Demirbay misses a penalty. By the way, Diogo Costa, the Porto goalkeeper, first ever goalkeeper to save a pen and give an assist in the same game.
There you go. Well done, Diogo Costa. Now, it's funny because Bayer Leverkusen played exactly the way I expected them to play under Xabi Alonso.
Yeah.
You know, very attacking, very open, creating chances. Porto played exactly the way I expected, but given their situation, which was obviously all wound up, the fans angry, you know, can't screw this up. And so they score a goal, as you said, with the Diogo Costa long ball and to Galeano. Then they miss the penalty. Wow. Then they concede. Then Leverkusen concede two penalties in the second half. It's almost like a stereotype to talk about, like, oh, look, you know, bad defending, Leverkusen, unnecessary penalties. I think it's a learning curve for Xabi Alonso. He got the big win at the weekend. And, you know, now this. But, I mean, this is a bad, bad defeat.
Yeah.
Leipzig leave it late, but win 2-0 away to Celtic. Jules, they're already classic football villains. And now they can ruin the Shakhtar fairy tale. Wow. I see this as a total light versus darkness clash.
It is completely. And obviously, Leipzig being humiliated, remember, in game week one by Shakhtar. That led in a way to the Tedesco sacking. So we will see how Marco Rose does now. They were not great against Celtic in the sense that Celtic, I thought, played really well, had some chances when they hit the post and the bar in the same move.
I'm not a Celtic fan, but I am an Ange fan.
Yeah, you're an Ange fan.
And I thought
they deserve better.
They certainly deserve more out of this game.
They deserve more from this game. In the end, Timo Werner somehow with a goal and an assist. So we will see. But I felt a bit for Celtic. I was sad for them because I think they had played well, even against Real Madrid, against Shakhtar. And to not have more points in that group is a bit heartbreaking for them. FIFA have announced, Gab, that they will compensate clubs who send their players to the World Cup by giving them $209 million overall, or around basically $10,000 per day per player who are away with the national team. This is fair, right?
Yeah, and this includes obviously the week before the warm up as well. Look, for some clubs, it really makes no difference. For other clubs, this really, really moves the needle. This level of compensation, this starts adding up. FIFA has been accused in the past of like, oh, but the clubs play the players and blah blah blah. Well, you know, this is their way of giving back to the clubs. On top of that, there's also insurance if people get injured while on World Cup duty, with FIFA paying the premiums of that, or most of the premiums of that in most cases. So, you know, it is something that the clubs get back. Yeah. Jim Ratcliffe has revealed that he met with the Glazers to talk about buying Manchester United, but they were not interested in selling. Yeah, so he says he might buy another club instead. Now, of course, it's the same Jim Ratcliffe who, after not participating in the whole bidding process for Chelsea, then he submitted that letter about, oh, look, I'm an English owner. Yes.
Yeah, you know, choose me, please.
Please pick me after I haven't gone through any of the due diligence. I don't know. I mean, he's getting older, maybe.
Maybe he's got too much money. He's not sure what to do with it. I mean, he's got niece that... Not sure how...
But he's even worried about that club.
Yeah, I'm satisfied he is by that club, seeing the start of the season. And another club, if you're Jim Ratcliffe, you're not going to go and... I mean, no offense, but you're not going to go and, you know, buy Brentford. I don't think this is what he wants. He wants a big club. So Chelsea's gone. United is a no. Arsenal is a no. Liverpool, I think we can say, is a no. City is definitely a no. So Spurs? Spurs is an option, maybe. One day when our friend Joe Lewis... said that on his island, he decided to sell the club. I don't know. But I don't really know where he can go. Of course, yeah, you can try to buy, I don't know, West
Everton.
Ham. Everton, maybe. Is that what he wants?
I don't know. I genuinely don't know what is going on in...
But if you try to buy Chelsea, it's typically the kind of club that you want. I don't think you would settle then for a club that is not as big or...
I just hope that whatever club he buys, he doesn't come up with some nonsense story about having been a fan, right? Because remember, he was a Manchester United fan, because I guess he's from up north, if I'm not mistaken. Then when the Chelsea thing, he says he's a Chelsea fan too, because he lived in... I'm sure he owns a nice house in London. I don't know. If he buys Wolves, is he going to go and buy a place in Wolverhampton and be like, you know, my great-grandfather was a... Come on, man.
Paolo Maldini says Milan hope to wrap up Rafael Leao's contract extension before the World Cup. There's not many days left to go. Gavi's deal expires in 2024 in the summer, and they're ready to pay, by the way. Part of the debt... to Sporting, that Leao, because of that that conflict with Lille at the time, has to pay back. By the way, Lille will have to also pay some of it.
Yeah, so again, we've mentioned this before, but if you remember, Leao was at Sporting with the legendary Bastos back when fans came into the training ground, beat up the players. The club was partially responsible. The players sued for essentially to become free agents.
Yeah, to terminate the contract.
Sporting lost out on all these contracts, and then Sporting took it to FIFA. And in the end, the court stopped FIFA. Sorry, they went to a court in Portugal, I think. Mm. The court found the players personally liable. Now, obviously, Rafael Leao does not have 19 million or whatever it is lying around. The question is who pays for him, because Lille profited from him, because obviously they signed him as a free agent and sold him to Milan. Yeah. Milan has him now. Milan have offered to pay 10 million reportedly towards this fee to get Leao off the hook for that. And in exchange, obviously, they'll pay him a lower salary than what he wanted. Personally, I think it's good to get the lawyers away from you. And I think he seems happy at Milan. So Milan fans keeping their fingers crossed. Mikel Arteta says he backs Gabriel in his row with Jordan Henderson. He says he can't say anything more about it because there's an FA investigation. Jules, can you say any more about it? Because I just saw the pictures. I have no idea what happened. There's been nothing leaked as far as I've seen about what might have happened.
We mentioned a bit about it. We talked about it a bit about it, sorry, on Monday's show with Nadem. It seems that there's a loss of translation somewhere, that Jordan Henderson said that he said something to Gabriel. Gabriel heard something else in Portuguese, which Jordan Henderson doesn't speak. So I think the FNA has interviewed the two players, I believe. So they're going through their report and their investigation on what exactly was said, maybe what others heard, because there might be players who were around that kind of scuffle at the time that maybe heard exactly what Jordan Henderson said, or maybe not so much. So I think we should have, you would think now,
some level of clarity.
Yeah, pretty soon, I would think. I mean, how long does it take you to do that report?
I am impressed about two things here. One is that neither club leaked what might have been said. And I think this is very, very grown up on the part of both Liverpool and Arsenal. The other thing, actually, which I'm not impressed about, but What is Mikel Arteta? I'm assuming he was asked, oh, do you support Gabriel? What's he supposed to say? He wasn't on the pitch, right?
Nope.
Arteta. He doesn't know what happened. Of course he's going to support his player's version of events.
Well, silly question. Yeah, I know.
What are you going to say? No, I think Gabriel's a big fat
liar. I think he said, I can't comment on the whole
thing. He said, I can't comment because it's an investigation. Yeah, fair enough.
More investigations, Gab, because Cristiano Ronaldo will not accept the FA charge for slapping the phone out of a kid's hand last season away at Everton, if you remember, on your way back to the dressing room in an effort to avoid a suspension. Gab, when will this end? How come we still talking about this now?
I know, this is absolutely demented. I hope they have an investigation into the FA. The FA investigates itself about why this is taking so long. Cristiano Ronaldo has apologized. If you recall, there was a kid who turned out to be autistic who... he's tried to take a picture of him, had his phone in his hands. Ronaldo was caught on video just knocking the phone away.
He just lost that game.
Knocking it to the ground. Ronaldo apologized. He invited a kid and his family. You know, does he need an FA ban on top of that, some sort of FA censure? I don't know, but don't just decide. So. You have all the facts. You have the video. You have the statement from Ronaldo. You have the statement for the kids. You got 10 billion witnesses. Why is this taking so long? What is the issue here?
It's crazy.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Spanish FA boss Luis Rubiales continues to have issues with leaked WhatsApps. This is ridiculous. Now we know which teams he doesn't like. This is not a good look.
Oh my God.
When does this end?
I mean, talking to his dad, WhatsApping his dad and saying basically that he can't bear Sevilla, Villarreal and Valencia, his three worst. I'm like, dude, come on. You're the president of the FA in Spain. You're such a big role. You, even if you think this is private, and it is private, of course, it should not be leaked. But still, you know, you've got there's a
now. Do we know how they got into his WhatsApp? Like, is he one of those weirdos who like uses WhatsApp on his desktop computer?
Exactly. And I think when the computer either went to an update or an upgrade, I don't know, whatever. I think this is when someone got all those files in, and now I give them to El Confidencial, who like little by little, I think it's El Confidencial, little by little, like published some of it. We've heard before of his relationship with Piqué, for example.
Yeah. So that had news value, right?
Yeah,
that had news value. To me has no news value.
Just to
the
give
guy
a bad
talking
name
to his dad.
Look,
yeah,
it.
This is I you know, Rubiales, not always as big as Sam, but in this case, I think he's right.
Yeah. The Athletic reports that the Football League is considering scrapping the 3 o'clock Saturday blackout rule, which prevents games from being televised here in the UK between 2:45 and 5:15, whether it's an English game or European game, foreign game, whatever, to protect attendances. Gab, your thoughts, and do you think that the Premier League would follow them?
Well, it would be interesting if they did, because obviously the Premier League games, I think Premier League attendances run at like 90% anyway, right? So I don't think they would be impacted. You know my thoughts on this. I think this is completely stupid. You've got the evidence of Germany, which has more than 95% attendance or something like that. The stadiums are always sold out.
Yeah, also in the three top leagues, not just in the Bundesliga 2 and 3 as well.
And all their games are on television. So I think what this says to me is that if you have good infrastructure, if you have a good product out on the game, if you have a stadium that's the right size, you will sell it out. The argument here people bring up is like, oh, but what about, you know, and the fact that it's the Football League itself. So in other words, League Two clubs who are part of the Football League who have floated this possibility, who are putting it out to tender, I think, again, speaks volumes. They're obviously not that concerned about the attendances. So who are we protecting? So the argument people always bring up, oh, but what about non-league? What about, you know, if I want to go see, what's your local non-league club? Is it Enfield?
Enfield Town,
yeah, oh, but what if, will people stop going to Enfield Town if Manchester United is live on television?
I don't think so.
I don't think so. It's a completely different thing. I mean, you watch a game on television, you go in person, especially to watch something like Enfield Town. By the way, shout out to Enfield Town. Yeah, send us merch whenever you like.
Eighth division.
You know, it's completely different. If you go to Enfield Town, it's because you like Enfield Town. Yeah. I presume there's people in wellies and dogs standing by the side pitch, and it's probably raining most of the time.
Yeah, and it's £10 an entrance, I think, or £5.
But it's completely different. So what are we talking about here? Chelsea will appoint Christopher Vivell, formerly of Leipzig, as technical director. He's been in the job for 2 years at Leipzig. And because apparently you also need a sporting director, they've been linked to Southampton's Joe Shields and Norwich's Stuart Webber. I both highly regard you. Shields has only been in the job for a couple of months. By the way, these titles are maybe confusing to some. So, Jules, can you cut through the BS and tell me what this means?
And also,
how do you go from like Monchi and Michael Edwards to these guys who may be good but nobody's ever heard of?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question, Gav. It would be interesting. I think the technical director, sporting director, one will be in charge of the women's side, the academy side as well, maybe overseeing everything. And then maybe the other one would just do the first team recruitment, scouting network, all of that. I'm not really sure if you need both. I mean, or you can have one and then the other is his kind of assistant. I don't know, maybe, or part of the recruitment team. I don't know. It seems like this story is the gift that keeps on giving. It seems like we've been talking about this for 12 months. All the guys who, you know, snubbed them and said no when we thought they were going to say yes. And now those dudes who like seem to have the same profile, but then two different jobs titles, but maybe the same job or maybe no. I'm like,
By the way, the Vel thing, Leipzig coming out very hard on him,
saying,
you know, they fired him. They said, you know, there was an issue of trust there.
Yeah.
What's also weird to me is they'd spent all this time talking to Christoph Freund, right? I mean, this is all the same family. It's all Red Bull, right? Like, it's kind of, the whole thing is odd to me. But look, we all agree.
Yeah.
It's good for Chelsea
to
have someone. Sure. A technical director, sporting director type.
Nasser Al-Khater, the CEO of Qatar 2022, says that all fans will be welcome and that there will be no problem if same-sex couples walk around hand-to-hand in Doha during the World Cup. Gab, will this make the controversy go away?
No, it won't, because he also said, look, we're not going to change our laws on LGBTQ. Yeah. I don't have the power to do that, and the country doesn't want to do that. I think what's important is that nobody goes to the World Cup and feels unsafe or uncomfortable. Some people will still feel unsafe and uncomfortable, and I think that's understandable. All he can do is try to be, I guess, welcoming about it while he's there. He gave the interview to Rob Harris from Sky. He also explained, you know, they said this again about the workers and the compensation and how they abolished the kafala system and they introduced the minimum wage. You kind of take it as face value.
Yeah.
What I'm interested in is, I think, protection for workers is something that I would hope 99.999% of people can get behind, right?
Yeah.
Unless you're some kind of sadist or something, right?
No.
LGBTQ issues, you get into local culture and whatever. But I think it's encouraging to say, if we're going to welcome the world here, hosting World Cup, part of the responsibility that comes with it is making sure that members of the LGBTQ community who come here feel safe. So I'm taking this as a guarantee from the guy who's in charge of Qatar 2022, that these guys are going to be fine. And hopefully, you know, people will feel more comfortable and will feel reassured about this. Yeah. Julen Lopetegui, recently sacked by Sevilla, has turned down the opportunity to manage Wolves. Are you surprised, Jules, given who his agent is?
Yeah. I'm not surprised. I mean, he said, like, for family reasons. I mean, maybe the family didn't want to move to Wolverhampton. No offense to Wolverhampton. No. I don't know.
I think his dad is in his 90s.
Yeah, he's not well. And I think maybe you need a break after what was a successful but quite draining
time. It was extremely draining. And you go from there to a relegation fight in a different league all of a sudden.
Exactly.
No, well done, Julian.
Yeah. Paulo Dybala won't be back for Roma until 2023 and his World Cup with Argentina is also in doubt. God, this is harsh.
Yeah, I feel for him. I've been critical of him in the past, and obviously, you know, injuries have always plagued him for a long time throughout his career. But, you know, when you got a guy, this could be his last World Cup. I don't think it was even 100% guaranteed that he'd be in the Argentina squad. But, you know,
you feel for him.
To get injured, scoring a penalty as well is cool.
Yeah, and as for Roma, I think weirdly they might actually have a little more balance in their team. Obviously, with Pellegrini supporting Zaniolo and Tammy Abraham, but obviously it's a big blow because he was their marquee summer signing. Portland Thorns owner and CEO Merritt Paulson has stepped down from his role following the U.S. Soccer Federation investigation into abuse that has rocked the U.S. women's game. Jules, your thoughts?
This is good. This is a good step forward. He had no place in the game anymore after the damning report, as you said. I mean, everything that he, I mean, maybe not him directly, but certainly what happens within his organization. This is all I care about. He's in charge of that organization. Everything that happened in there, we heard Megan Rapinoe this week or last week saying that he had to go as well. He had to step down. So I'm glad that he finally did. He's not the only one. I'm expecting more others to follow, and they should. And this should be a fresh start now. So you're hoping to get rid of all of that kind of dead wood. I think this is the only way to call it.
I mean, I think originally he said that he was going to take a leave of absence because there's two guys below him who obviously were more involved with the day-to-day who, you know, they come out looking terrible from this. Originally, all three of them were going to take a leave of absence. Then he fired the other two guys, and then he said he's going to step aside. Now, realistically, the man owns a team, right? So he's like, all right, so I'm not going to be CEO anymore.
Yeah.
He's still the team owner.
Yeah, he should sell the franchise, like we saw in basketball, the Clippers. Yeah.
It's a tough one because the reality, if one of your goals is to have investors in football clubs and people are committed to women's football so that women who play football can have jobs and play at a high level and so on and continue to develop, you know, Merritt Paulson and the Portland Thorns certainly offered that, right? So, yeah, you could go to him and say, oh, you have to sell the club, but then, you know, the difference between this and an NBA franchise is like a license to print money. So you forced a guy to sell the NBA team and you've got people lining up around the block. People are not lining up around the block to buy NWSL franchises.
Yeah,
so it's a difficult thing to navigate. What I think is most important here is that he's learned from his lack of oversight.
Yeah.
And if we don't see him in the public eye for a while, it's good. I'm okay with him continuing to own the team and maybe coming back even one day. I don't think he needs to be banished ad infinitum. Well, I think you have to take a step back and say the most important thing now is to have proper safeguarding for these athletes. But equally, you have to weigh that against having opportunities and people who are putting money into the women's game. Yeah.
Daniele De Rossi has his first gig in football, Gab. He's going to take over Spal in Serie B. What do you expect? He should be good, right?
He's a very, very bright guy. I know people just see him as like the gladiator type with a beard and everything. But he's a bright, thoughtful guy. He was an assistant with Italy. I wish him well. And I wish the Spal owner, of course, Joe Tacopina very well, because, you know, it's his fourth club now, I think, that he's owned. Auxerre are near the bottom of the Ligue 1 table, Jules, but that's not the only reason coach Jean-Marc Furlan was sacked, is it?
Naughty Furlan, naughty. No, at the game against Clermont at the weekend, he was insulted by the home crowd. So he turned around and gave them the middle finger. And then if it was not enough, he got sent off for it, and rightly so. So on his way back to the tunnel, he gave them two middle fingers this time, as it was as a goodbye present, if you want. I think he would have been sacked regardless at some point, maybe not as early as this week. But that was the final straw, I think, for the club, the owners. They've lost 5 and drawn 1 in the last 6 in Ligue 1. They've been promoted in the summer. But you should not behave like this as a manager. He didn't apologize after the game. He said, this is what I do. I'm violent. I've got no brains. Like, I mean, come on.
Dude, there's something very King Lear about this gentleman.
The FA of Ireland, the Football Association of Ireland, so we have apologized after the women players who qualified for the World Cup sang a song which references the RIA during the celebration for qualifying for the World Cup. Sorry. Gab, what did you make of it all?
So, look, if they felt the need to apologize, then, you know, you respect that. I was not familiar with this song. It's by a band called the Wolf Tones. I'm neither Irish nor Celtic fan. It says on Wikipedia that the song was actually written for Celtic Football Club on their 100th anniversary. I have no idea if that's true. It's this is such a hornet's nest. It's a complicated thing.
Very.
I mean, come on. I don't understand this. I don't understand these weird relationships between, you know, United Kingdom and their neighbors. I don't understand, you know, the IRA. They have a political wing that is actually in power called Sinn Féin as well. I don't understand all this stuff. To me, it just looked like a bunch of young women who were celebrating it. And this is a very, very catchy tune, I think, objectively.
Yeah, it is.
It is. And they sang the chorus from it. Are people that bent out of shape and offended by it? I don't think they wanted to offend anybody, so it's right that they apologize. Yeah. Manchester United have written to season ticket holders asking them to provide evidence that they attended games.
What?
Jules, what's this all about?
Well, yeah, Gab, they're not happy because in the past, some of the season ticket holders didn't fancy turning up to home matches. And so that meant empty seats. That meant people, other fans or the club were not happy that Old Trafford looked empty when tickets have been sold. So
empty is always relative term, Old Trafford, because it's just so big that, you know, but there were some empty seats.
So the club has said, you know what, let's do something. So they're saying to season ticket holders now, if you don't attend 10, at least 10 of the 19 home matches in the Premier League this season, you're going to risk losing your season ticket. And as you know, there's a big waiting list and all of that. So we'll give it to someone else. The problem is that now you've got your season ticket on your phone at Old Trafford and you scan your barcode to go in. But sometimes the scanners haven't worked. So you've been at the ground at the game, but it's not registered as you attending it. So now the club is saying stuff like, can you prove to us that you were actually there for the Brighton home game, for example? And what were you wearing so we can see on CCTV camera? It's definitely you, row R, seats 15. I'm like, what's going on?
I can't believe this is actually somebody's job to go and do this. Now, part of me I bought the ticket. I don't need to go if I don't want to. And by the way, you can also get other people. Equally, I want to say this. It's a nice problem for United to have because they also know that they have this massive waiting list for season ticket holders. They are so popular. That's why they can fill the stadium. And I understand also the sentiment of other fans who go there all the time and say, well, why are these seats empty? You know, we're not talking many seats, still.
No, that's true, Phil Neville is annoyed, Gab, that Inter Miami's playoff game against New York City coming up has been moved from Yankee Stadium to City Field in New York. Does he have a case?
So the reason it's been moved was that the Yankees are in the playoffs, and the Yankees are New York City's landlord. It was weird. He came out and he says, oh, I still don't know where we're going to play when this is his press conference last week when, like, it had already been announced that they're going to play at City Field. City Field, I actually went on Google Maps. It's about a 15 to 20 minute drive, depending on traffic, from Yankee Stadium. He said, oh, but what about the hotel and everything?
Come on.
It's not that difficult, right? It's
Surely you should focus on the game.
He did go on and say, oh, but there's a World Cup coming up. You know, I expect more. And I'm like, the reality is, I'm sorry. Like, in New York City, anyway, baseball is still a bigger sport than this brand of football, right? Yeah. And will be for a while.
Yeah.
So I think it's as simple as that. There's another argument about, should New York City build their own stadium? Should they have been forced to? They had pledged to build one.
Yep.
That is a whole other argument, and I think that's a fair argument to make. But still, I think you looked a little bit silly on this one.
Yeah.
Jules, this brings us to an end, but we have to come back on Monday.
Oh, what a Sunday we are.
We have the Classico. That's right. Paris Saint-Germain, yes?
Against Marseille.
Oh, and the other Classico, too.
Yeah.
Somewhere in Spain. And, of course, Liverpool against City. Oh. How about that? Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.